Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Four Supreme Court decisions came down today. Of course, they're nearing their end of the end of their term, which ends at the end of June. And as we've been reporting, probably the biggest is the ruling that a school's strip search of an Arizona teenage girl accused of having prescription-strength ibuprofen, can you believe it, that strip search was illegal. So let's get details from Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate.com and founding editor of a new women's-oriented website called Double X. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
So tell us about this ruling. I think people have heard about this case, the 13-year-old girl who had maybe this ibuprofen on her, and she was strip searched to the point where she had to remove her clothes and shake out her underwear because they were looking for these pills, which the district bans. And what did the Supreme Court say?
The Supreme Court said, and this was almost a unanimous decision, it was really 8-1, this whole important part of it.
Clarence Thomas?
Yes, Clarence Thomas.
It's always Clarence dissenter. Thomas.
it was a very reliable name to give in that
context. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. The court said that this is an unreasonable search under the Fourth Amendment, and they went back to a standard they'd set earlier in the context of schools, where they had talked about how a search can't be excessively intrusive in light of the age and sex of the student and the nature of the infraction. And then the main opinion is by Justice Souter. He talked about how the suspicion was, as you were saying, only that she had this extra strength ibuprofen, not that she had like some really serious contraband, and that having her take all her clothes off in that context just went way too far.
So was this a constitutional ruling? Was this a Fourth Amendment ruling?
Yes, it was. And this is a question of how the Fourth Amendment applies in schools where, you know, the court has recognized in the past that school authorities are kind of in place of the parent, that great Latin phrase, in loco parentis, and then has given schools rules that are a little different from the rules everywhere else. But there's still an expectation that searches should be reasonable. And then the question is, like, how do you actually fill out that quite vague word? And the court's answer in this context was that given that the school only thought that she had ibuprofen and given that she was only 13 and they went so far in searching her that this was just way too much.
So did they give any other parameters like this would be acceptable, this wouldn't be acceptable if she was 16 and she had antibiotics or, you know, whatever?
Not really. They went back to this previous standard and said, we're reaffirming this idea that you can't be excessively intrusive in light of the age and sex of the student. They didn't really, you know, they're giving it context because now there's this set of facts, and I think schools are on notice that strip searches are probably not going to be permissible unless you have a really, really good reason to think you have to immediately, you know, seriously investigate a potential infraction.
Did you say age and sex of the student, so it would be actually less permissible with a girl than with a boy?
Yeah, I did say that, and I think you're right. There is an implication, at least, that asking a girl to take all her clothes off in this manner, or most of her clothes off, might be worse. Although I guess, on the other hand, if you had a boy in a particular circumstance where there were, you know, I don't know, female school officials taking it, you could imagine sex playing out in different ways, I guess.
You know, before the decision, there was talk that this case could be an interesting litmus test regarding empathy. Right? That word that has come up from the president and regarding Sotomayor and anyone who the president would appoint, that the judges would have to make a decision based on more than just the law, but on their emotional assessment of how egregious the situation was. Do you think that applies?
Well, here's how I think it did come up. You know, at oral argument, some of the men on the court seemed pretty insensitive to the plight of this 13-year-old girl. They were sort of making light of how bad it really was to have to, you know, shake out your underwear if someone was looking for drugs in your underwear. And Justice Ginsburg, who was obviously the only woman on the court, was clearly really dismayed by that. And she has since made that clear in an interview. And in Justice Souter's opinion, which is the majority, there's really, it's pretty straightforward, except that he does say that changing for gym is getting ready for play. And this exposing for a search is different. And he calls it so degrading and then points out that a number of communities have decided that you don't have strip searches in schools at all. And so I think you can see kind of his response perhaps to Justice Ginsburg and this attempt to really be careful in how he's describing what happened to her.
So just for the curiosity factor, if nothing else, we now have Justice Thomas being the only one who wanted to throw out the whole Voting Rights Act in that decision last week, and being now the only one who thought that this strip search was constitutional. What was his argument?
His argument was that the standard the court was setting or reaffirming was vague and amorphous, and that school administrators need this kind of authority, that if they're going to maintain discipline and impose these zero-tolerance anti-drug policies, they need to be free to have the kinds of searches they think they need.
Anything else worth mentioning from the other three Supreme Court decisions today?
Well, quickly, there was a pretty interesting case out of Arizona about bilingual education. A group of English language learning students had sued the state, saying that their school district essentially was really underfunded in teaching Spanish-speaking students to speak English. And they had won in all the courts below. The case came up to the Supreme Court, and those decisions were overturned. And the court said that the analysis below had gotten way too caught up in the funding question and hadn't taken into account changes in how the school was teaching English language learning based on the No Child Left Behind Act and some other changes the superintendent had made. So that was certainly a loss for these particular kids in Arizona, and I think generally for how easy it is to sue school officials when you don't think they're funding your program adequately.
So these decisions leave three remaining for the very final week of the term next week, and I guess the biggest one is the New Haven case, Ritchie versus DiStefano, on whether municipalities may decline to certify results of an exam that would make disproportionately more white applicants eligible for promotion than minority applicants. This is the firefighter's test in New Haven, on which Sonia Sotomayor was one of the lower court judges, or really court of appeals judges, who ruled that that test did discriminate against people of color in New Haven. So that's going to be closely watched still to come.
Yes, for sure. That's come down as, I think, the biggest case of the term, particularly because of Sotomayor's involvement, but also because it's this very difficult, hard set of facts involving an accusation of reverse discrimination, in which you can really see why the white firefighters feel like they didn't get something they were promised. But you can also see from the city's point of view that they were worried that this test violated civil rights law because the test results left the city unable to promote any African Americans and barely any Hispanics.
By the way, why is it all so shrouded in mystery still? The Supreme Court is like this Middle Ages Byzantine, organization. They don't tell you what day they're going to release the decision. We know it comes down at 10 o'clock, but people like you have to go to the court and just like wait around like fish waiting to be fed. And today at 10 o'clock, maybe they'll hand one down. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock, maybe they won't. And any time between now and June 30th, you have to act like this supplicant. And we're all waiting, oh, will Emily have a story today or not? Why do they do it this way?
Well, I think they sort of like the mystery. Maybe they really don't know until the last minute because people are working on their dissents and their, you know, fights in the footnotes. But I think
they heard these cases in like November.
Yeah, it's true. Well, here's the good news, though. This year was better than most. They told us on Tuesday no decisions Tuesday or Wednesday. And then they told us today the remaining three are coming down on Monday. So at least we know what's happening on Monday.
All right. So our next segment, Emily Bazelon from Slate and XX, is going to be the airline travelers' rules of etiquette for being in the airport and being on the plane. You want to kick us off? Anyone that comes to your mind? I know you didn't come prepared for this.
You know what? I didn't, but I'm glad you've let me. My latest beef is that you get onto the plane and there are no blankets anymore, and you ask for a blanket and they tell you have to pay for a blanket.
Cold Emily Bazelon.
Yes.
Covering the Supreme Court for Slate.com, and she's also founding editor at the new women's-oriented website, XX. Emily, maybe we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and start calling up with those rules for behavior on the tarmac, in the air, in the terminal. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. As our Getting Around Etiquette series continues, stay tuned.